what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see that people are making online right now?
Probably the biggest one that I see primarily among the internet marketers is that they're targeting, often targeting the wrong people. I mean, they're thinking to themselves, I want to have a business and make money, and I want to sell stuff to people and make money, and yet they're often promoting to people who are unwilling to spend money. Because so many people come online and they think to themselves, well, I can start an internet business with no expense. I can advertise for free and I can do everything for free. And when you're promoting to people who are really operating on a shoestring budget, quite often they are unwilling to spend money. They think they can get advertising and everything for free. You can't, but people try to at times. And so just targeting the wrong market, I firmly believe that it's best to really target a niche market. And I actually know that more so now than ever, because I am on the phone every day with some fairly successful marketers, and most of them are not marketing internet marketing products. They're marketing consumer products. I mean, everything from cars and houses to nutritional supplements and things along those lines. People are buying those more so than the how to make money product. The problem I see with the internet marketing circle or crowd or whatever you want to call it is that it's a lot like when I was in mail order, we had ad sheets where people would publish a newsletter and mail it out to their subscriber base, just as you do in e-zine. But it seemed that we were all advertising our products to each other.
Right.
And the internet marketing crowd is quite often the same way. You know, we're all on each other's mailing list, and we're all advertising the same products to each other. You know, in certain circles, especially people who just started their e-zine and they're giving away maybe free ads to attract subscribers, a lot of the beginners do that, and they don't at first see that they're just selling the same products to each other.
Right.
It makes no real sense. Another mistake is that they're trying to sell products at a price too low. You know, they're convinced no one would spend $49 on an ebook or $97 on an ebook, heaven forbid. But I sold 997 copies of John Reese's Traffic Secrets course. You know,
yeah.
I sell a $97 ebook. So if it's something people want, they'll pay what it's worth to them. And so it's, I think, more beginners should offer a wider range of products and not be afraid to market a $97 ebook. If it's good, it'll sell.
Excellent. So what are some of the success stories that you've seen? I know you're a consultant as well.
I consulted with a lot of people, and I've helped a number of friends start membership sites, and those do quite well. In fact, I recommend almost anyone that they start a membership site, but it has to be unique. It can't be just a membership site full of ebooks and software, things like that. It has to be a membership site that serves some unique need. I mean, if you look at, I wasn't instrumental in building this site, but you look at a site like Terry Dean's site, Net Breakthrough, where they conduct advertising experiments at times, and they publish the results of what happened when they ran an ad in an XYZ newsletter, things like that. You look at Corey Riddle's membership site, where he's interviewed people just like you do now, but it's got to be unique content. That's the problem with most membership sites is it's too easy for a person to join the site, download everything, and not see anything unique and just leave.
Right.
I started my own membership site, and what's unique about it is that I do a brainstorming session every week with members of my mailing list or my clients and stuff, and we record it, and I put that in my membership site. So it's fresh, new, recorded content all the time, and that makes the site grow.
What kind of things do you brainstorm for?
What I do is I invite members of my list to first of all email to an autoresponder, and that autoresponder gives them the call-in details for the call itself, and also invite them to send in their website URL, and we pick three a week to critique. I have people on the call who were trained by Jay Abraham or Dan Kennedy or whoever, and we look at the copy, we look at everything about the website, we look at the product, and we just tear the website apart and put it back together during the call. You know, each people tell the person what feels right or wrong about the site, what about the site leaves the eye out of the copy and someplace else or turns them off, and over the months we've had many people completely revamp their sites and turn them into money making sites. So we review three sites on the call, and at the same time I take questions during the week from people by email, and we go over those, and it's a true brainstorming session in that I don't even mute the callers. I just leave the line open, and anybody is free to jump in and ask a question or give their feedback on the site. So this is actually a marketing tool, the networking calls and brainstorming calls.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have a dedicated bridge line. It's available to me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and so I just have people call me on this line, you know, for an hour, hour and a half every Saturday morning. And what it does is it lets me connect with my subscribers. It lets them actually hear a voice, and it's only costing me an hour and a half of my time. It's generating a product for me. It's letting a lot of my subscribers meet other people who have similar interests, and a lot of them have formed partnerships and joint ventures. So it's just a marketing tool. I learned that from Alex Mandosian, who also gives free teleseminars about once every week or two. He just said, you know, give back a little, and for those who probably couldn't afford the consulting or whatever,
yeah.
And they'll appreciate it, and when they can or they need something more specific, they'll come back to you. So it's just a marketing tool, and it's a very successful marketing tool.
What's the website or your website address for that?
Well, it's just williecrawford.com.
Oh, that is on your Willie Crawford site.
Actually, it's not mentioned there. It's just mentioned in my newsletter.
Okay.
So that if they went to my discussion forum at williecrawford.com/CGI-BIN, /index.CGI, it's a long URL. If they go to my discussion forum, there's a sign-up form for my newsletter there, and every issue of my newsletter I mention whether or not I'm going to have a call that week, because some weeks I'm out of town or traveling or whatever.
Right.
But the call's absolutely free, and it, you know, it's a chance for beginners and very seasoned marketers to jump on the line and share their perspectives on things, and we do discuss anything they want. We've talked about using co-registration leads. We've talked about the Can Spam Act. We've talked about just copywriting. We've looked at different people's products are selling and told them why we didn't think it would sell, or how they might get themselves in trouble with the law because of certain verbiage on the page, things like that. You know, and we always preface it with, you know, this is not legal advice, but, you know.
Right, yeah.
That statement on the page might get you in trouble or whatever. And then we help people just to show them what on the page maybe is not believable, you know, why they're not making sales. So it's a very good call. Again, it cost me an hour and a half of my time on a Saturday morning. And a lot of my customers are from that call.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned that with that call you have a dedicated bridge line. Can you explain how that works?
Yeah, the bridge line is just a number that people call into, and it bridges all the calls into one network. And I have some codes I can punch in that'll start a recording. So if I want to record the call, I can. And then the company that records the call later on sends me a copy of the recording as a MP3 file or in other formats. And then I can take those calls and either offer them any way I want to, or have them transcribed and offer them that way as additional content. What the calls are doing is they're generating content for my membership site.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So who do you use then? What company is it for dedicated bridge lines? I'm thinking for.
I use e-teleconferencing.com. That's e-teleconferencing.com.
Okay.
The company is owned by my friend Gary Knuckles, and you know, he and I we looked at another secret to success on the internet is setting up a business that offers residual income so you're not constantly chasing after new customers.
Yeah.
And so I set up I private labeled the one shopping cart system and called it profit automation. You know, it's a shopping cart with mailing list management and autoresponders and ad trackers and all that stuff tied into one.
Uh-huh.
Customer signs up once and they pay a monthly fee, and out of that monthly fee, I get a residual income. Well, Gary went out and set up his own bridge line or teleconferencing company for the same reason, you know, for residual income, get customers, and then you don't have to constantly chase after new customers all the time.
Right. So then this the dedicated bridge line is actually a business opportunity as well.
It is. He doesn't have a formal affiliate program set up for his. A lot of there are other companies that do, but the commission levels usually aren't that high. But you know, I encourage anyone that does teleconferences or teleseminars that there are customers that he has who just use it for their salesman to call in and list the recorded message every so often, or they'll post a message for our subscribers to listen to, and since it's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you can record a message and leave it there so that anyone who calls that number will get that recorded message. So it can be used for a lot of different purposes.
All right, okay.
You know.
Now you have another product that's quite interesting, and that's your conference/workshop, which is the Internet Marketing How-To Workshop. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah. When I spoke at Bob's conference, I looked at the fact that most people there had paid either $1,000 or $1,500, and I looked at the fact that when you do a conference, typically the affiliate who sells the ticket gets 40% or 50%, and I thought, well, these are fairly lucrative. I think I'll do my own. And so I decided to put together a workshop teaching people everything involved in the process of product creation, from coming up with the idea for a product or piece of software or a service to putting it together, to marketing it, to doing the copywriting, the legal aspects, everything involved with creating mostly internet marketing products. But we looked at niches too, and then I decided I was going to do one. I looked at there wasn't a lot of information out there available on how to put together a workshop or a conference. Fred Gleick hosts what he calls his seminar on seminars twice a year. He does one in Las Vegas in the spring, I think, and one in New York in the fall. And there he teaches people how to conduct seminars, and he has all walks of life at his seminars. He has doctors who are teaching doctors or chiropractors or people in the self-storage industry or, you know, you name it, school teachers. Anybody that wants to put on a seminar, they can attend his seminar and learn to do it. And I actually attended his seminar prior to doing mine, and he gives a lot of useful information on how to do it. But still, I didn't really know what I was doing when I put on my first one. But it's basically deciding you're going to do one and picking a theme for it and a location, and then finding speakers and convincing them that you can get enough people there to make it worth their time.
So can you take me through kind of a step-by-step process then? Because you've got, I mean, you've got the location.
You've got the location. If you, and I'll throw out right there a mistake I made. I live in Navarre, Florida. I live right on the coast. But there's not a major airport near where I hosted my first seminar. So what that does is that forces people to change airlines a lot. It makes the cost of transportation to get there more expensive. So when you look at location, it's actually better if you can pick a major city or something near an airport. You know, that's why you see so many seminars, for example, recently held in Atlanta. Atlanta is a major metropolitan area that you can just get a hotel or a conference center right off the airport. They're also frequently held in Orlando, Florida, because people can take advantage of the Disney packages, for example.
Right. Yeah.
So location is important, and when you start getting exotic locations or hard to get to locations, that affects the number of people that are willing to travel to get there. But typically, you can go to any major hotel that has a large meeting room or conference room, and they will give you use of their conference room if you can assure them that they'll sell a certain number of rooms to guests. They'll block the guest rooms for you, and then they'll give you a meeting room free of charge. If you a lot of the hotels in the major cities have already booked up their meeting rooms up to a year in advance, though. I discovered that when I did my first one.
Wow.
And so then you have to turn to the different types of conference centers and stuff. And my last one I did at a conference center on Okaloosa Island here in Florida, and they charge about $1,000 a day for the room.
Right.
They also require that you have over $1 million in liability insurance. It's required by the local municipal government, which owns the company. And that's so if anyone gets hurt on the property or during the course of the event, you're covered there. And so that's a fairly expensive proposition. The insurance itself is fairly expensive, depending on what you have planned. But any major event you see, whether it's a concert or whatever, they're required to have that type of insurance. And then you're lining up the speakers, and you have to decide who you want as a speaker. I was advised not to get the same speakers who'd spoken at every internet marketing seminar that had ever been held, you know.
Right.
Because people who've been to seminars before want to hear someone slightly different, and others maybe do too, because they've heard the recordings from other seminars.
Right.
So once I'd lined up the people, then it was a matter of coming up with an itinerary and putting together a website to start promoting it.
So how did you approach people to be a speaker?
Most of the people that I knew personally were more than happy to be a part of the seminar. And I'll let you and your audience in on a couple of secrets. One of the secrets is that when the speakers usually will speak at a seminar free of charge, but they hope to make money from back-of-the-room sales. That is, they do their presentation, and then they offer other products they've created, whether it's tapes or whether it's coaching or doing legal services or whatever. They hope that, you know, some of the people in the crowd will be impressed enough with their presentation to want more of what they have to offer.
Right.
And when a sale is made in the back of the room, the seminar promoter and the speakers split the profits.
Okay.
With whatever's worked out. But the speakers make their money from back of the room sales and from ticket sales. Speakers customarily get 50% of ticket sales, and the promoter gets the other, and he, you know, uses that to pay his expenses. And so basically you have to convince the speaker that it's going to be worth his time to travel from wherever to be a part of your event. And if you choose to record the event, which most people do, then you've got the cost of recording. Most people that do the seminars now will only do like an audio recording because video is so much more expensive. Lately, a lot of people have started doing DVDs, too. I honestly got the feeling when I did my first one that that the seminar host and the people on the circuit didn't really want you to sell a lot of the recordings. They were hoping to sell seats to the next event. And if you've just heard them speaking on tape, you're not, you know, as likely, perhaps, to go to the next event, you know.
Right, yeah.
And so that was something I noticed. But I mentioned the back-of-the-room sales. There's actually ideal times to speak during the course of an event. For example, speaking right after lunch is not good because everyone's sleepy and they're not paying attention.
Right.
If you speak earlier during the course of the event and you offer something for sale and people buy it, well, then the speakers who are speaking later, maybe people have no money left, you know, so it's better to speak early. And so there's a lot of considerations like that. But it's just a matter of working out a schedule and deciding which speaker goes when, and then starting to promote it. And that's actually the hardest part of it. The biggest problem that I discovered was if you get speakers who are very popular on the seminar circuit, they do help promote the events, but some of these guys are speaking almost every weekend during the seminar season, and so they have to choose which events they're going to promote. I mean, otherwise they're sending out a special mailing every week, and so the majority of the sales of seats to these events actually are made by the promoters, not the speakers.
Okay.
And a lot of people, when they look at seminars, think, well, I'll make a lot of money by putting one of these on. What they don't realize is that they're the one that will have to sell most of the seats.
So how do you go about doing that, then, yourself?
With mailings to my list, with putting on preview teleconferences where you get the speakers to come on and give a sample of what they're going to go over, where the speakers come on and basically showcase their expertise.
Right.
And the ones that they've invited to the preview teleconferences, you know, they sign up, they'll sign up through their links, their affiliate links, and that's the biggest way that we do it lately, is just preview teleconferences.
It sounds to me like setting up a conference is a lot of work, and is there actually very much money left for you at the end of the day?
There can be, but I know seminar promoters who've scheduled seminars and canceled because they weren't selling enough seats early enough in the process, and I know promoters who planned on making most, I actually planned on making most of my money, for example, on the back end, because I recorded a lot, both seminars I've done thus far, and I sell the audio tapes, the video tapes, and DVDs from those.
Okay.
And that's almost all profit.
So just from the seminar alone, how much would you make on just the seminar without the back end products?
I'd say it's reasonable to expect to make maybe $50,000 in a weekend.
Okay. So it's still a good chunk of money from just the seminar itself.
If it's put together properly, I mean, the hardest part again is selling the seats.
Yeah.
And so you've got to find the right speakers, and it really helps if the speakers promote heavily to their list.
Okay. Then on the back end, what would you end up looking at as far as that? There's probably a certain lifetime to the products, would there be?
I don't think so. I mean, my friend Carl Galletti has put on his, I think he's done the Internet Marketing Super Conference in Vegas, and I think last year was maybe his seventh or eighth one.
Right.
And he's still marketing the videotapes from the first one.
Oh, okay.
So, yes and no. I mean, a lot of the people who spoke at the earlier ones are no longer on the speaking circuit.
Right.
And you can listen to some of the older material and see that the lessons are still valid.
Yeah.
And I'm actually right now in the process of developing a direct mail campaign to sell my internet marketing DVDs primarily through the mail. If you can develop a mailing list of people who buy these types of products, you'll do much better with direct mail than you will with email.
Okay. Where would you find a list like that?
You build it, or you joint venture with people who've done it before. If you listen to Ted Sieba, for example, talk, he'll tell you that over the years he sold a number of sets of videos to people, and he has a list of people who like to buy internet marketing videos. And so anytime he gets a new one that he's created or one of his partners has created, he sends a mailing out to them and makes sales from that.
Okay.
You could also buy these lists through list brokers. You know, I forget the name, the SRDS, Standard Rate Data System, I think
right.
It's called. There's a lot of directories that offer a mailing list of people that buy certain types of products. And so if you can just buy a list of people that have an interest in starting their own business and that buy business-related tapes or books, and you know they're likely to be interested. And then it's just a numbers game and doing a small test mailing and watch your results, and then if it does well, expanding. If it doesn't do well, then you try something else.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of different income streams, or multiple income streams that you're working with. How do you end up managing all that?
My coach taught me to not so much have multiple streams of income as what he calls multiple streaming income. That is where you take one product and from the same core product, you produce as many different income streams as you can, so they're all related somehow. And that's less work than having a bunch of different, totally unrelated income streams. But the way you manage it, if you do, is you do what you do best, and you hire others to do the rest of it for you. I have friends with membership sites. I have friends that sell all kinds of products and services who don't physically do their own shipping, who don't physically do the maintenance on their site, who don't physically even manage any aspect of it. They build a site and have a workable model, and then they hire someone fairly inexpensively to do the work for them.
Okay. So you still have a lot of free time available.
Yes. I mean, it's to me, it's not worth working yourself to death, and so some things I do myself, and others I hire others to do for me. I outsource. You can hire virtual assistants online. You can, if you say are selling a book or a CD or something, for example, John Reese's Traffic Secrets, that's shipped directly from his duplicator.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, he sold $1 million worth in a day.
Yeah.
And they all went up from his. He outsourced all the customer service. Even, you know, if you contact his customer service people, he's not physically dealing with any of those issues. He's got someone hired to do that for him.
Right.
So he can focus on other projects.
Excellent. We'll just shift gears again, just for a moment. One of the biggest things that's, I guess, is being publicized online is joint ventures. That's kind
right.
of the big trendy thing to do. I'm sure you get hundreds, maybe even thousands of joint venture offers in a month. How do you decide what to, basically who to joint venture with, what products to joint venture, and maybe even, actually before we even get into that, how could I write a subject line that's going to attract you in an email?
I get so many emails wanting to do joint ventures that the ones that get through to me the most are probably just Willie got a minute or something like that. It's not really even mentioned a JV proposal. But then once I open the email, it very quickly gets to the JV and doesn't go into a lot of detail, but ask me if I'm interested. Actually, right now, the most effective way to get the attention of a potential JV partner is not with an email, but simply picking up the phone and calling them.
Okay.
Or sending them a letter or a courier package. Because we get so much email, and it's so heavily filtered, and we get so much spam that it's really hard to get a person's attention.